You probably think that you know of every big-time radio and TV star in America. Oh, wrong again. Here comes the Colonel.
Okay, cut it out. That is a little much. It isn't even funny, so there. All right. We're going to get back to our interview with Adam Cohn in just a little bit, and I want to welcome you back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science and News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our interview with, as I say, Adam Cohn. He's the Clinical Associate Professor, Director, Laboratory for Additive Manufacturing, Robotics, and Automation at Southern Methodist University. Professor Cohn is pretty fascinating. He's been telling me some things that I had no idea about, but you may very well know about them. When I'm talking to other people about 3D printing, it seems that it's a pretty widely discussed subject. Anyway, Professor Cohn is going to be a speaker October 22nd at the Arlington Convention Center, Ballpark Way in Arlington. This is the 28th straight year for MetroCon, and he's going to be making a presentation there on the very exciting subject of 3D printing. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. People tell us that that's really their favorite part of the show. And right now, though, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set. Rummage around in the coin jar just a minute for today's query.
To the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
And, of course, when we throw in the coins, we get to arouse the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, and sees all for a price. Okay, oh spirit of the fountain, here is an easy query for you today. This one's really easy. You can't mess this one up. What river forms much of the border between Romania and neighboring Bulgaria? Huh? The river between Romania and neighboring Bulgaria. What river does that?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell.
The spirit of the fountain knows. Well, that was an easy one. The river that forms much of the border between Romania and neighboring Bulgaria. Everybody knows that. It's the Danube River, of course. The Danube. All right, back to our program. Yes, once again, the sweet sounds of the Science News Studio Band takes us back to our interview. Okay, we're going to get back to today's guest, Professor Adam Cohn. He's Clinical Associate Professor, Director, Laboratory for Additive Manufacturing, Robotics and Automation at Southern Methodist University, and the fascinating subject of 3D printing. I had no idea the amount of progress that's been made in 3D printing. You probably have. In fact, as other people I've spoken to said, yeah, 3D printing is really it. And he's explaining to us about the simplest of things, about even a nozzle that reduces the number of parts that needs to make it. It comes down to one part, as he said. And then later on in the interview, you're going to find it fascinating because he's going to talk about prosthetics. Yeah, and actually printing, let's say, a replacement part like a hand that can interface with the muscles and the nerves. All right, let's get back to our interview with Professor Cohn.
There are some geometries that make a lot of sense to produce with 3D printing, and the nozzle that I mentioned is certainly one of them. In fact, they were able to by 3D printing the nozzle, reduce the parts count from about 18 or 20 to 1, and achieve a more efficient design in terms of fuel efficiency, and something that's probably going to be more robust and longer lasting because it isn't built by combining separate pieces, which might actually start to break apart after a while.
Well, this is a whole lot more fascinating than the news stories I've seen where somebody makes a plastic gun. I mean, really, if you're talking about whole industries that are getting involved with taking materials and reducing them to powder so they can do 3D printing, and of course you mentioned the expense, but then again, you're saving some expense because going directly from CAD, computer-aided design, directly order it through a printer, and all you have to do is make sure that the bins of the printer are being fed with the material and that the lasers work. I can see where actually you're cutting costs in one area while you're adding costs to another.
Well, that's true. Certainly the labor cost is typically lower, and you're saving on tooling, as I mentioned. So if you're planning to do small quantities of parts, Typically, 3D printing may be an attractive approach, whereas with high volume, it often isn't a practical approach because at that point, you'd probably be better off investing in the tooling, and then you can knock out the parts pretty cheaply. But there's no hard and fast rules because geometry plays an important role, and I mentioned that there are parts that you simply can't make without 3D printing. Or would be difficult to make, and that needs to be factored into any analysis of what is a good candidate for 3D printing and what is not.
Now, would you say that the United States is a leader in this regard, or is this some sort of a worldwide revolution that's going on all over everywhere?
Well, at this point, it's worldwide. The United States was the pioneer of this whole set of technologies. The first commercial technology was called stereolithography, and it was invented at a California company at the time called 3D Systems, which is actually now one of the industry leaders. Mm-hmm. Other developments of technologies occurred mostly in the U.S. Unfortunately, I think quite a few of the equipment providers have wound up being outside the U.S. However, for example, most of these metal printing machines are actually coming out of Europe right now. There are other efforts around the world. I mean, historically, the Japanese were fairly heavily involved. They're not so much now, but China is coming up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of machines coming out of China and quite a bit of research being done in Chinese institutions. But you'll find activities in 3D printing probably in every industrialized country right now.
Wow, that's fascinating. Of course, China, we expect them to. They seem to be coming up on everything very, very rapidly. And of course, some are saying that's because they have an easy time hacking into our secrets in industry and going and copying them than for their own uses. But tell me... after you get through explaining some of this at Metricon about the 3D printing, you're going to talk about some of the things that are going on at Southern Methodist University, too. So can you kind of fill us in a little bit?
Sure. I'd like to talk mostly about the main project that we've been involved with for a couple of years now, and it's funded by the National Science Foundation and under the umbrella of the National Robotics Initiative, which is... an initiative involving several agencies, including NSF and the Department of Agriculture and NIH. And it is basically an attempt to promote the development of advanced robotic systems, particularly what are called co-robots. These are robots that can work in closer proximity to human beings without being dangerous, for example. So, you know, a robot standing next to you on the assembly line, for example. Mm-hmm. And a subset of co-robots is soft robotics, which is a relatively new but increasingly active area in which people are trying to make robots not from hard, rigid materials that move quickly and with a lot of power behind them, but rather soft materials such as rubbers and other flexible materials, and using other types of actuation, typically like pneumatics or hydraulics. And the idea here is to certainly make robots that are safer to be around, but also make robots that maybe can do things that conventional robots cannot, such as, let's say you want a robot to pick a fruit off a tree. You might not be able to do that without destroying the fruit with a conventional robot, but with a soft robotic gripper, you could kind of surround the fruit and not damage it, much like you would if you were using a human hand to pick it. You can also imagine that a soft robot might be able to change its shape or squeeze through a crevice. And so there are new modes of locomotion possible and shape transformation. And you could imagine an application, for example, in search and rescue, where you do want to deploy a robot that will be able to slip through the cracks and try to reach someone who's trapped inside rubble. So anyway, we're funded by that initiative, and we are focusing on soft robots. An example of a soft robot might be an octopus tentacle, or a robot that has an octopus tentacle, and you can picture that, of course, and realize that it's a very flexible shape that can adapt various configurations. And you also realize, when you think about that, that there probably need to be a lot of actuators in order to control that. There are a lot of degrees of freedom. If you don't control anything, it's just a floppy tentacle, but if you control it, you can have it change its shape and do useful things. So once you realize you need to make a lot of actuators, and probably also a number of sensors to know what those actuators are doing, and also perhaps a sensing skin so that the robot knows where it's being touched and how it's being touched, well, you realize that you have a tremendous problem in manufacturing. And that is, how do I get all those actuators in there? How do I get the sensors in there? How do I get them all wired up together so I can control them and sense from them? And you realize it's going to be an expensive thing. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be bulky. There's no good solution. So our approach is actually to try to monolithically print, that's to say print it in one single process, all the actuators, all the sensors, and all the interconnects between those things. And so we're developing a process that we call fiber encapsulation additive manufacturing, which allows us to print multiple materials and achieve multifunctional active structures such as soft robotics.
Wow. Ooh, boy, you just really... That was quite a little journey you took us on here. Let me see if I could kind of back up with this just a little bit. Soft robots, and that can feel and can squeeze through smaller areas. It sounds like we're creating a subspecies of human almost. And then these robots, of course, you're not talking about them thinking on their own. You're talking about are controlling these robots. I don't know if plans are eventually to have them think on their own or not. I would suppose so. Certainly to be making some decisions when we can't be there to tell them what decisions to be made, like in, say, search and rescue in some tight situations and some difficult things. Also, the robots may be able to operate without air or water or something. And then on top of that, you're saying that we're going to create these robots by printing them through a printing machine that will make all their various different parts all together and assemble this robot. It just sounds just phenomenal. It's very, very hard to grasp. Is that what we're going to be seeing?
Well, I think so. You know, we don't have expertise in the artificial intelligence aspects of robotics, and it's not something we're pursuing, therefore, but we are pursuing the manufacturing and the mechanics of robots, and trying to come up with, as I said, a method of printing complex electromechanical systems monolithically. So you would basically load up this 3D printer with the required materials, send it the appropriate CAD data describing the geometry, which includes multiple material designation of different components, and then let the printer go, and you would come back to something that you could take out of the machine, connect it to a source of power, and or perhaps external microcontrollers and maybe other electronics, but then it would essentially move. So it could, you know, almost walk out of the printer itself, if you will.
Wow. just mind-boggling. And I could see that if the time comes that there is artificial intelligence and they're able to think on their own, you've got a robot who's pliable, flexible, soft, can move in various places, have feeling, and also can do some thinking. I could see there might be a whole a union for these robots and it almost treated like a subspecies of humans. It's just really hard to fathom. Can you tell me, Professor Cohen, what role is nanotechnology playing in manufacturing and these manufacturing printers and sorts of things and play into these robots?
None that is particularly relevant at this time, at least with our process. There are materials that people are working on, which sometimes have nanoparticulate particles basically inside them to improve strength or stiffness or something like that. And that might work into what we're doing, but we are working on more of a macro scale and possibly going a little bit into the micro, but not really the nano in terms of the structures that we're producing. So these are, we're talking about building things that are, you know, fist size to the limb size. I mean, think of, as you said, building something human-like. As a matter of fact, we think that some of the applications for this technology include prosthetics. Like you could imagine if someone has lost a hand, that you might print a replacement hand for them, which has actuators and a sensing skin built in, and make it from a soft material. And then be able to interface it, and that's, of course, the tough part, to either the nervous system or to maybe existing muscle remnants that are there, and somehow have it move in a more natural and articulate way than a traditional prosthetic hand would move. So it'd be, and of course it would be customized, and this is one of the great virtues of 3D printing, to look exactly like the person's other hand, assuming they still have that one, and a mirror image of that. So I really do think there are a lot of important prosthetic applications for this work once it's further developed. So, I do want to say, though, that we're not at a, you know, we're not at an advanced stage of development. We're at a pretty early stage of development.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. We're talking about the era of a bionic human being, like we saw on television 40 years ago, and now all of a sudden it looks like it's in the future. But you're saying it's not really as close as it may sound in what we're talking about right now, and that would lead me to the next question. Look down the road 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. What do you see in the future? What's the prospect out there?
Are you talking about in general for 3D printing or for what we're up to? What did you have in mind?
Hey, I'll tell you what. Wherever you want to take us with this, it's fine with me. 5, 10, 15 years down the road, if you have a broad view of a whole lot of things, go ahead. Throw it at us.
Well, I think in general we're going to see a lot more use of 3D printing as materials become more available and the materials' properties become better and as the cost of machines comes down. So I think that 3D printing will play a very significant role in manufacturing downstream. I don't necessarily think what a lot of people have been thinking, that there's going to be a 3D printer in everyone's home in the near future, in part because there really hasn't been a killer app found for that yet. And there are many alternatives to having one in your home, such as going to a service and just getting something that you need. But I think that most people are going to be satisfied with that. There are so many aspects to 3D printing and so many potential applications. I mean, people are looking at building entire structures, habitable structures, buildings, using 3D printing. I think that that will eventually become an interesting way of making at least some architectural structures. People are looking very seriously at printing food, and if they were ever extremely successful with that, which they're not yet, you could imagine that being a justification for having a 3D printer in your home. There are even people looking at potentially printing textile type structures, so you know, you could maybe one day imagine printing clothing that you download from the internet. So there's a lot of potential applications, some of them rather far out right now, and some of them probably won't go anywhere, but the field is very, very active. I just came back from the big academic conference on 3D printing, and there was something like 300 papers being presented over 3 days. There are many active companies, both large and small, a lot of startups actually in the last few years. A lot of innovation is going on, and I think we're going to see in the next few years some pretty stunning things come out. I think the only other thing I wanted to mention that as part of this effort to produce soft robots, we've not only had to figure out how to do electrically conductive materials and non-conductive materials in the same process, which has been traditionally a big challenge, but we've also needed to develop some soft materials. And we have now the ability to print materials that are extremely soft, I mean, much softer than a rubber band. And traditionally, 3D printing has been restricted to pretty rigid materials like, material like ABS or nylon, which really isn't that flexible. We actually have two efforts relating to soft materials at this time, one of which is just starting. And I think that there are going to be a lot of applications that come out of such things as well. I mean, again, perhaps prosthetics, but also, molds and seals and valves and all sorts of things that you can imagine. If you look around and you see quite a few rubber items in the manufactured world, and most of those right now cannot be 3D printed with good materials, and we're trying to change that. I think that certainly in terms of standards, one should always have the most integrity possible in all one's endeavors. But I also, in terms of an approach to maybe innovation, I would say that you should always start asking, how should something actually be? And then go and find a way to make it that way, as opposed to starting with what you know to be existing capability and then trying to incrementally improve it. So, ask yourself, if you're developing a product for someone to use, how should it work ideally? What should the experience of that user be? And then ask what technological capabilities out there could be put to use, maybe in combination, to get you there. So that's sort of an approach, if you will, to moving forward technologically.
All right, Professor Adam Cohen, the Department of Mechanical Engineering at Southern Methodist University. He's a clinical associate professor, director of the Laboratory for Additive Manufacturing, Robotics, and Automation. You've been just a fascinating guest and really given us some very deep things to think about. Thank you so very much for being with us. We'll look forward to seeing you at the Arlington Convention Center the 22nd of October for MetroCon.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk, and I've enjoyed it tremendously.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
As a CEO in this position, only do what only you can only do, and hire people to do everything else. And so at times that you give up parts of your job that you love the most, and only focus on the things that you do better than anyone else and then hire around you. And I think that the concept of shedding responsibilities and surrounding yourself with more knowledgeable people around you, and not having an ego in the room, but helping lead a torch forward, fosters a great company environment around you of people that are focused on the same mission. And my name is Michael DeFranco. I'm the founder and CEO of Lula.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.